This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Welcome in to a post-signing day edition of the Husker 24/7 podcast. I'm Michael Bruntz, joined by Brian Christofferson. On Thursday, February 2nd, we finally put the 2023 recruiting class to bed. It's tucked in. The lights are out. We're tiptoeing out of the room, hoping that we don't step on a squeaky floorboard. 39 new additions, not counting Xavier Betts and Isaiah Garcia Castaneda, who were in the portal and then out. But so 39 new guys, lots to talk about. There was one new addition on Wednesday, five total for the additions to the class. Let's just get right into it. Brian, what did you kind of make of yesterday? Because it was a little bit drama-free. They got DeAndre Barnes. How did you think Nebraska kind of closed things in January when, I mean, frankly, there's really not as much going on with the December signing period now being primarily when guys sign?
Yeah, there's not as much going on, but they kept it pretty interesting up until the final weekend. I think both you and I thought DeAndre Barnes would commit. Now, he was an interesting guy and remains sort of a prospect in the shadows to me, I guess, because he's hard to reach, which is fine. But so I don't have haven't had a personal interaction with him or kind of you get a feel for what he's about, but his tape looks pretty good. And Matt Rhule talked about him yesterday as a guy who Marcus Satterfield was just driving through Colorado and he had like eight or nine schools he was planning to hit. He was not planning on hitting the program Barnes is in, where Hayden Moore's from, right?
Yeah, Regis Jesuit.
Yeah, Regis Jesuit. But he saw it, and so he called the coach. He's like, hey, can you care if I pop in? And the coach is like, this guy Barnes, people are missing on him. BYU did offer him in mid-January, but that I guess that counts as a Power 5 offer now, right?
Yep, they're Power 5.
So that should kind of count anyway, even before that, by the way. So he had two Power 5 offers, and after he visited this weekend, it just felt like, well, common sense says he's going to pick Nebraska, and he did, but with no frills. He hasn't tweeted about signing or anything like that. It's an old school approach by Nebraska to recruiting him. It was an old school approach to the prospect by not having a bunch of trumpets play when he announced it. I kind of appreciate the whole thing.
Yeah, no, it was nice. Like to really, you know, cement the old school thing, you probably need him to like sign his letter of intent on the hood of the car or something like that, just to make it official. But so they added five, and we kind of ran through these guys on Tuesday. But Ismael Smith Flores, Jeremiah Charles, Sua Lafotu, and Demetrius Bell.
Yeah.
Demetrius Bell. So two guys who are going to be at wide receiver, a tight end, a defensive lineman, and a defensive back is what they added. Nebraska also announced a few of the Georgia transfers that had committed in January and are already on campus. All 11 transfers are all on campus. So I want to ask you this. There's a couple of things that I want to talk about with this class. It's a huge class. And whenever the NCAA did away with the cap on the number of guys that you can sign, it was almost kind of like a gift for programs going through transition classes, because you could add as many guys as you want. There's rules to make the numbers work. Nebraska will be down to 85 by the time fall camp starts, come hell or high water. When you look at this class, what do you say is the strength of this class in terms of position or what Nebraska was able to get done? Aside from the speed thing, we know this is a fast class, but right. What position do you look at with this group and say, like, okay, Nebraska really helped themselves out in this spot?
I don't know if they did or didn't. We'll see. I don't want to be a hype machine guy, but I feel like we shouldn't lose sight, just because some of these guys have been committed or were committed for a long time, of the offensive line additions and a lot of key in-state guys that Rule and the staff have said they want to build their program around guys like that, guys who, you know, grew up around here and care about it. And you pass that torch to the next generation of Nebraska kids. So, you know, that you could go down the list of like linemen, you know, Sam Sledge, Gunnar Gatula, Brock Knudsen, you know, on the other side, I guess, Maverick Noonan. But guys who could be in the trenches who are homegrown lads who aren't necessarily going to be a part of the mix right away, but I think long term are going to be really important to whether, you know, in 2 years or 3 years, you're hoping a couple of those guys are kind of playing and key guys, you know? And so that's what's interesting about this class. There's that mixture of portal guys who you're like, Eric Gilbert, come on down, play right away. Be that dude, please, you know, at tight end. You think that about MJ Sherman. And then you've got a lot of prospects from the high school JUCO range who you might say, yeah, it's going to take a little time. Like Ismael Smith Flores the other day, he knows that he's got to build his body up to compete at the Big Ten, and he's looking forward to learning from Eric Gilbert and Thomas Fedone and those type of guys. So I feel like there's this nice little combo of guys who could splash quickly, but also there has to be an understanding as you put out your Super Six list or whatever. Some of these guys don't think about what they're going to do in 23. Think about what they might be in 25, because that's going to be a big part of the whole Rule operation is development.
Yeah, it's the probably the most intriguing group for me is the wide receiver spot, because you've got kind of the headliner in Malachi Coleman, who I agree with what Blair Angulo said, you know, yesterday in kind of his assessment of Nebraska's class, that Coleman, I think, really kind of surprised people with the attitude and kind of being that, you know, number one wide receiver type guy at the Polynesian Bowl. But beyond that, I mean, I think that there's kind of, like you said, some guys in that group that you look down the line, and I think that by 25, I mean, you're going to have a pretty good idea of, you know, what this class was, because, you know, you've got guys like Bryce Turner, who's going to be a little bit more of a developmental guy. You know, I'm intrigued by Jalen Lloyd. I think he's probably, even though he's right in the backyard here in Omaha, is, you know, probably criminally overlooked in terms of his ability as an athlete. He's a damn good football player too. And I get the sense that he has a little bit of a chip on his shoulder too. That people sometimes just see him as a toolsy athlete and not a football player. And you know, we even forget about guys like Jaden Doss, who was in the class for a long time. And I think he's got long-term potential. And that group, to me, as much as we talk, I mean, you're absolutely right with the offensive line, that it's going to take time to grow and, you know, for a few years for those guys to come along. it feels like this wide receiver group is kind of the same way, where you're probably not going to get a lot of these guys on the field, but right away. But when you look at what Nebraska's issues have been in the past at that position, it's been that they've not been able to develop guys at wide receiver and bring them along because they either flame out, they leave, guys just don't ever get in the mix. So it's going to be a tall challenge for Garrett McGuire and this offensive staff, but I like what they did there. I really think that it's a good mix of guys that, you know, are going to fill in pretty well behind the veteran guys that Nebraska has that are going to be counted on this year.
An interesting question going forward will be, Rule's talked about this a couple times, how because they got here in early December, they had to do it a different way than a lot of programs around the country, because you're actually looking at guys' senior tape. Not that others aren't, but a lot of programs are kind of full at that point, you know? So they're maybe not diving as deep into what some guys did in October or November, their senior years. In this case, Nebraska's got three guys in this class who only played 1 year of high school football. One of them being Jeremiah Charles, which was kind of a great recruiting yarn if he blows up and is a great player, of how, you know, he put on a show dunking and all that stuff in front of Rule and like Evan Cooper. And Evan Cooper looks at Rule, is like, I see him, coach. He's an athlete, and walks out of the gym and is like looking at his highlights, like in the hall or whatever, as they decide, like, what do we do with this guy? Do we offer him? So, I mean, stories like that were sort of part of this Husker class. And I wonder if, because of the experience, if Rule and staff are inclined to save a little space on the back end, you know, for your class, knowing that you kind of like operating that way. And there is an advantage to getting some of those late bloomers or guys who are great athletes who just happen to play their senior years. That'll be interesting to watch.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yeah, because, I mean, you basically have the advantage of time. And you know, the recruiting kind of time frame for the staff was completely off because of when they were hired. My sense is that there's always going to be those types of guys in a Matt Rule class, maybe like 3-4 of them, that, you know, are either, you know, late bloomer types, guys that are just freak athletes. And you know, I guess it's just a matter of, you know, do they pursue a guy earlier in his recruitment if he's got fantastic track times, or are they able to wait a little bit longer and you know, offer at the last minute? It's a balancing act, and also to me, it's a little bit of, it's a confidence thing, right? Like, Matt Rhule had a kind of a throwaway line in his press conference yesterday about how they have moved guys to different positions and how they move guys around. And he said, that's kind of he said something like, that's part of our magic or something like that.
Yeah.
And there's just so much confidence in the way they evaluate, the way they recruit, the types of guys that they look for, that it's, you don't want to say it's a system, but it kind of feels that way a little bit now. And I think that there's always going to be room in a Nebraska class, as long as Matt Rhule is head coach, for a guy like a Jeremiah Charles that's a freak athlete that loves football, that's willing to come in and work. And the work part of it is, like you said, for a guy like Esmael Smith-Flores, being comfortable with waiting a year or two, knowing that he's not a finished product. Because I think sometimes nowadays in college football with the portal, guys are not willing to spend the time, almost to their own detriment.
Yeah. And you're right. He had that comment. There's a lot of interesting things within the press conference, but about people kind of wanted him to dive into the roster. And he's basically like, I don't know yet, you know, give me some time with this. And certain guys are flex guys. They can move around. And Hassan Reddick gets brought up a lot. I understand why, because he's one of the best players in the NFL now, and he was produced through his program. So that'll be interesting. There's a bunch of guys who they could go on either side of the ball, what they end up doing with them.
The other, I guess we're kind of moving into more what Rhule is talking about in his press conference, but the other thing that stood out to me was he had this line about, and it was kind of along the lines of, where do you put guys, essentially, and knowing to not he's not going to judge this roster as he sat there on February 1st, because he just doesn't know. But he had this line that he has his coordinators essentially make a ranking of the most impactful players that they have, and try to, I guess, kind of fit what they're running and what they're going to do to the guys that are on the roster. And to me, it's like, when you step back and think about that, it's like, oh, well, that makes a lot of sense. Like, but I don't know that coaches are all the time willing to do that. And, you know, I started thinking too, especially about what Nebraska's got defensively, where it seems like in a 3-3-5 or however they're going to choose to run it, it seems like there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to be moving around and trying out different spots and seeing what they can do to get on the field this spring, maybe than what I would have expected.
Yeah, I mean, that's why this spring is going to be probably the most fascinating spring we've covered. And people are like, yeah, I've heard that before, but it would be hard to compete with this one, because the roster's got to dwindle. He doesn't seem worried about it. They have upwards of 100 scholarship guys by our math. Although I think people need to be careful with that too. Like, scholarships can flex from year to year, and there is going to be, you sense there's going to be some creativity perhaps that allows you to reward guys without them technically being on scholarship. So the old scholarship distribution charts that are popular, and we have one, and sometimes it gets outdated and stuff like that. But I think all of them are outdated right now. That's my opinion. I don't think anybody knows, like, who, let's wait and see. Like, I'm not trying to throw stones, but it's just, let's wait and see through the spring, and then we'll put out what we know. But right now, it's like, how can you say for sure, like, who's going to be on there and who's not? And if this guy gets, they're doing something different with him, there's obviously going to be some clever stuff with that. So I wouldn't lose sleep about it if I were Husker fans. They know the situation. There was a reason they were still stacking guys. And Rhule said the other day, some people are going to like our standards of operating and some aren't. You know, I think he's fully ready for that too. Like, you're going to get out there in the spring and some are going to embrace it. And those are the guys you want to roll with. And some are going to be like, this isn't really me. And he's going to say, that's fine. And they'll move on and we don't have to throw a big tantrum about it around here. Like sometimes it's happened when guys leave, it's just like, okay, they had to leave, you know? So in that way, spring's going to be interesting. And also because of what you said, it's just like certain guys don't have defined labels. And so you can't write anything in pen yet.
What did you make of kind of the conversation about, you kind of touched on it, but like, now is the time that they're building culture, and that's always a big conversation piece with a new staff. But what did you make of kind of what Matt Rhule said yesterday about how they're going to go about doing that? Like, it seems like a lot of little things that are adding up to big things.
Well, that's the idea. And I get it to it. People listen to it. Culture is one of those things that gets brought up and it sort of seems vague and it's just a, you know, a buzzword to like a fan and media in the off season. It's usually part of fluff pieces. I think people think like sort of like, okay, yeah, the culture is great and all that. We'll see. What's it really like when you're up against it? all we can do right now is take little kernels that are given to us and say, oh, that's kind of interesting. Maybe that'll work, you know? And like I wrote about it and I wasn't trying to overdo it, but I thought that part about the fact he makes them eat together and they can't just go out with their to-go boxes is just like one of those little interesting things. I thought he had a great line about it. I think I have it right here. He said, he was talking about those type of standards. And he said, what do they have to do with winning? Nothing but everything. And I really like that turn of phrase because that's perfect. It's like one of those phrases he said that you wish you would have just wrote yourself. Because it's exactly that way. It's those little things that every program in the country is trying to say, this is going to matter. We do this little thing here, this little thing there in February and March, that's going to matter in October and November. And you hope it does, but you don't know for sure. If it does, you got to give it a lot of credit. And if it doesn't, you got to go back to the drawing board a little bit. But yeah, I like that there's some detail stuff like that. I think he's really focused on, he said this on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast about the ping pong. Like, it's a thing where you got to put down your phone and you got to focus on the person across from you. And that's the same way with making guys eat together and stuff like that. It's building these things where it's like, this is your brother. You're going to get to know him. And even though it is, it's 2023 and everybody's got their phone glued to their face. Like, let's be a little bit different inside this building and let's focus on each other. And if you can be that kind of team in this type of world, I think you can get a lot done. And I think he knows that.
The women's college tennis also apparently a very big key to what they're trying to accomplish.
27 guys, he said, between coaches and players, 27 went to. I thought that was cool. I think there's just Husker fans gravitate toward this. It's wanting to be a part of the whole athletic department and not making football bigger than everybody else or like, hey, I'm this and you're over here. And one of the ladies who plays tennis was saying, hey, we got a match today. It's at 4, you coming? And she's probably expecting like, yeah, yeah. And they're like, yep, we're coming. And 27 guys showed up and we're rooting for. And I think that's cool. And I like that. And I think this community appreciates it. Even as it gets bigger and bigger in Lincoln, it still is sort of a small, I always feel like it's a small town in some ways. You can still run into a lot of people. And Rhule talks about like where he goes out to eat. He went to the Dish for his birthday and stuff like that. And I think all that stuff right now is, you know, you can take it for what it is, but it's a good way to connect with the fan base. Say, we're a part of this. We want to be here. We love being here. And I think it has played very well. And I don't think it's an act either. I think it's just kind of how he is. I don't know. There's something to be said for that part about him saying, we're not celebrity coaches. it's just a game. Like, let's keep it in perspective. And sometimes we do lose sight of that around here. So I think that's good when the head coach says that.
Yeah, a little bit of like kind of context, I guess. Like, it's like, you know, we're just simplify things a little bit. I think sometimes it just gets made into this huge Nebraska football gets made into this huge thing. And I mean, it is. I mean, it's a, you know, multi-million dollar enterprise, but I don't know. I mean, it is kind of, I think Rule does a pretty nice job of just kind of boiling things down to the, gets it down to the studs almost. This is just what it is. It's not overly complicated. So we'll see if that carries over once the season starts. But yeah, I mean, I think he does a pretty good job of a little bit of, I don't even know what the word I'm looking for is. Not context. Help me out here.
I kind of get where you're going. I mean, I think
perspective. That's what I'm looking for. Oh, a little perspective.
Perspective. Yeah. Well, I think he was right on the. He hit the nail on the head with like Ed Foley. He was talking about Foley, you know, going around the state and hitting 8 or 9 schools a day and basically saying that's what we're supposed to do. You know, and it is. I mean, really. Like, I know it's fun when, and I think I don't think Ed Foley was making a big deal about Ed Foley either. Like, he was just like, hey, people are enjoying this. Here's where I am. It's cool to that small town and that establishment too. If he's in a place where it's like, hey, that's us, you know. So it's a way of connecting. But I think Rule was kind of like trying to say, like, I appreciated all the stories and the like, hey, these guys are really like hitting it like nobody's business, but it's just sort of the way we've done things and it's the way you have to do things. And also understanding there's people in the state, as he said, who work harder than they do. So he appreciates that. So all that stuff is going to endear you to people. And also, I think, is said with a genuine feel from him. And I also think he's just really good in a press conference setting. It's not, I'm not trying to brown nose or anything. He just is. Like, I wrote the Xavier Betts story last night. I asked him about, you know, Betts and Isaiah Garcia Castaneda coming back and sort of what made that seem right to him. And if you go read that story, I quoted about everything he said. Just a really articulate response about being Xavier's, you know, advocate. And it's not really about the football part's nice, but that's not the main thing. But I mean, it was a really detailed answer that you just don't, I don't know. We haven't gotten a lot of stuff like that, to be honest, from head coaches before. And I don't even mean that as a knock. I'm saying Rule just excels at that. I feel like, at least right now, maybe in the season, it'll be a little more buttoned up and that's fine. But I thought as I went through that tape, like, man, that's a great friggin' answer to that question.
I was thinking about it during the press conference yesterday. It was like Trev Albert's big thing was, you know, we're not hiring somebody to win the press conference, but he managed to hire somebody that's winning every damn press conference there is. So, it was a good run, a good half hour.
And he listens to his coaches' press conferences too.
He does. He was dialed. what was the line? Nobody likes a press conference more than Ed Foley. Is that what he said?
Yeah. And I think he didn't, it wasn't, I'm sure they talked it out, but Knighton wasn't the only one who said it. No. Other guys had talked about them being a competitive staff and I didn't take it in a bad way at all, but he's like, I didn't love that. He was making the point that, like, that's a good point, actually, about how every guy that comes here is from our whole staff, because you don't want, like, it becoming an individual contest in recruiting, because then guys, I haven't thought about this as much, but as he said, guys will just be, like, doing favors or, like, building up their offer list. You're not in your head. You have thought about it, but it's
I've thought about it, and it's happened. Like, it's definitely happened here.
Yeah, it's true. As you go through it, you're absolutely right. There's, you could, if you wanted a really interesting podcast where you'd have to charge extra money, you could probably go through a list of 8 to 10 offers that have been made like that. But yeah, that's sharp by Rule though, to like kind of, he's like, let's nip that narrative in the bud.
Yeah.
Take it a different direction. And so he did.
It's a very fine line between going rogue and recruiting for the unit, basically, like team recruiting, I guess. So yeah, I thought that was interesting that he kind of nipped that in the bud. We a few more minutes here, we'll go kind of short today. Looking at that, the additions made, not talking about transfers, but JUCO and high school guys, if you had to stake your reputation to, I'll give you two at most, two guys that, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, we're going to look back and say that was a good signing in that transition class. Who are you going with?
I feel like this is cheating a little. I get first pick though. Okay.
I'll give you first pick.
Well, this is a boring answer maybe, because people are like, yeah, that's not fair. So you can say if I have to do another one in place of him, I think Tristan Alvano, I just think he's going to be a slam dunk. Okay. I don't know why, haven't watched how close these games are and seeing Nebraska on the wrong end of all these one score games and stuff. And then you watch teams like Iowa who annoy the heck out of Nebraska fans, cause it's like, they don't do things that statistically well sometimes. And yet they have a better record because they capitalize on special teams and certain things like that. They always have a good kicker, always have a good punter. I just think if Nebraska has that guy who for like 3 or 4 years is like a weapon who can bury like a 55 yarder. That's what you need to find nowadays. Like you're seeing it at the pro level, like you get that ball to the 39 yard line, you're in field goal range now. And that's a high bar for young Tristan to jump over. But if he can be that type of leg and that weapon where it's just like, yep, that's money, on to the next thing, you don't have to worry about it. That's going to win Nebraska a game or two a year in the Big Ten. It will, because it's that tight. And so he'd be – I'd start there. How about you? And then okay. I'll think of some others that aren't cheating.
No, that's a good one. I was going to go Riley Van Poppel as my first pick. I think there's something to be said that during the recruiting process, you can figure out when a kid is just kind of wired a little bit differently than most 17 or 18 year olds. And I think that Van Poppel certainly fits that bill. I think the runway is pretty wide for him to be able to get playing time. I think he's probably a pretty good fit for what Tony White is wanting to do. And I mean, he was really productive in Texas as a high school player. And so I'll go with him. I think he's one of the additions that probably gets forgotten about a little bit, but I think he will see the field sooner than later.
Okay. I mean, my other one is Eric Fields. I just think this staff thinks they nailed it on him. He's going to be versatile. He's one of those, we were talking earlier about guys who like, where exactly how do you use them and all that stuff. But he's just been a baller. He had an incredible amount of tackles down there.
And 180, wasn't it?
Yeah. And his dad's genes, his dad was a boxer, right? Pretty good boxer.
Yep. Golden Gloves national champ.
So I just like everything I've heard about him. And sometimes you got to just listen to the coach when they, I know he was asked about Fields directly at the early signing day, so people should keep that in mind, but it was the way he spoke about him, Matt Rhule, that you could just tell full name. I didn't do that yesterday, by the way.
So, you didn't know.
I didn't embarrass the team. So yeah, he's my other guy. How about you?
Well, and I was going to say, Matt Rhule, when he was asked about Fields, he did one of those coach things where it's like, I really want to talk about this guy, but I really don't want to talk about this guy, but I'm going to talk about this guy anyways. And because he's like, I promise you, you're going to hear from Eric Fields or something like that. Like,
yep.
It was about as effusive of praise as you could have gotten in as short of a window of time.
It was like when Frost went all in on Juergens, not to that degree, maybe, where he said he could win the Remington or something like that.
Yeah.
Which Juergens never did at Nebraska, but I would have to say Frost and his staff, like, long view of Juergens were right on that. And people who want to still argue that need to give up that debate.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've got Fields and Alvano as your guys. I'll go local. I feel like there's just kind of looking at what Nebraska's got offensive line wise over the next couple of years. You've got the center spot, I think, pretty much sewn up for the next couple of years with Ben Scott. I think Sam Sledge has a chance to emerge from that group of linemen. I don't know that he gets talked about a ton, but again, another guy with, you know, fantastic football genes, that I think, can slide pretty easily into that center spot when it's his time. And so that's, I'll go with Sledge and Van Poppel as my guys.
Real quick to finish, maybe, do you have a, we'll do this more thoroughly. It doesn't have to be your committed to sleeper in the class, but who's like a sleeper candidate, you think?
Because he's only played 1 year of football and he had decent offers. But I think Ismael Smith Flores strikes me as a guy that has a tremendously high ceiling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his dad was a All-American defensive lineman at Iowa, and, you know, he's a basketball player by trade. I think he's got a very high sleeper potential for me to kind of emerge as that new age type tight end that it seems like Nebraska, you know, really has always wanted, but has never really been able to find. So I think long term he's got a really high ceiling.
I'll go with a 1 year guy too. I think Vincent Carroll Jackson. I did do a kind of an extensive interview with him, and just he's such an interesting guy. First off, he's just a real bookworm. As I was doing the interview, I was like, "What's your hobby?" He's like, "Reading. I just read a lot." He has like a bunch of books stacked next to him, but he went out for football last year in the spring, and he just from the get-go was a dominant guy. And Tony White obviously liked him because Syracuse was in on him right off the bat. And, you know, I just feel like it might not happen this year. It might be 2 or 3 years down the road, but there's a lot of raw potential there that they can tap. So he'd be my example, but honestly, picking a sleeper in this class is hard because there's a lot of guys who run together. You know, like you could go with like Ramir Stewart. I forget about sometimes, and I think he could be interesting on the back end. Ethan Nation could be interesting on the back end. I mean, we could do this and say, oh yeah, that makes sense. If you could name off like 15 guys and nod your head to, I think for that answer.
Yeah. Yeah, the Super Sixes, when they start rolling in, it'll be really fascinating on what direction people go with the sleeper. I'm guessing there's not going to be a ton of consensus there in terms of what people pick, but we'll have that, I'm hoping, next week once Schaefer's back. And we'll have plenty of breakdowns of this class. We're going to start looking ahead to 24 and 25, just as Matt Rhule and his staff are now doing. Baseball's coming up around the corner in a couple weeks here. They're going to be out in San Diego. Basketball's still rolling along, and we'll have all that coverage and more at Husker 24/7. Be sure to get to the site, and thanks for listening.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls.
Rated PG-13.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.